Today's episode with the founder of Touch Remedies, Dawn Bennett, will remind you of a few essentials. First, sometimes aggressive timelines have to be surrendered. Second, the universe has the most ironic sense of timing and humor. And third, when we focus on healing our own story so we can live and share our message, healing opens up for those we love too. So grab a cup of something delicious, a tissue, and a journal and pen so you can capture every sip of story and sanity, and maybe a tear or two. What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. Welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity. Today, our guest is Dawn Bennett. Dawn Bennett is the founder of Touch Remedies. She loves empowering individuals from all over the world to embrace powerful new ways to transform themselves and connect more deeply with themselves, others, and their communities through her relationship and intimacy coaching. Dawn's background as a massage and craniosacral therapist, homeopath, emotional freedom techniques practitioner, and student of all modalities that help individuals and communities heal, combined with her experience of speaking, teaching college-level massage for more than 10 years, building an award-winning massage business from scratch, and traveling across the world, has inspired and equipped her to help people identify and move through emotional challenges such as loneliness, feeling disconnected from others, and feelings of anxiety or sadness. She has clients who have worked through phobias, traumas, and intense emotional situations using EFT with her support and guidance. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. So we had the opportunity to work together on your book, The Touch Crisis. Mm-hmm. And it was such a powerful experience, I think, in both ways for both of us, that I had to invite you to participate in the You Can't Make This Story Up book, which is going to be releasing in January. And so I'd love for you to give people kind of a little bit of background on your story of what inspired you to actually start writing that book. What inspired it?
So I, like you said, I've been doing massage for many years, and really, I've always worked with people around touch and touch boundaries. I taught massage for a long time. And I used to go speak at women's networking groups around healthy touch and boundaries, and also like how to ask people for hugs. And after my presentations, often women would come up to me like, oh my gosh, you should write a book on that. And I was always like, I'm not going to write a book on that. Like, what do I have to write about? Like, there's nothing to write about. It's all been said before. And it kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And then people would tell me their success stories. Like one woman was like, I do Meals on Wheels, and I never thought about the fact these people never get touched or hugs. And I'm going to start asking if I should hug them, if they want hugs before I leave when I drop off their food and stuff. So I'd hear these really lovely stories, but I was still like, I'm writing a book on that. And then I went to Europe, and I was supposed to be working in Sweden, and my work permit got denied. And it just kind of kept coming to me like, you should write your book now. You should write your book now. And I was like, I guess I'm writing a book. So I started reaching out to like editors and stuff, and like okay, I don't want to just like write a book and have to redo it. I hate redoing things over and over and over. I like hate it. I hate it. I hate it. So I was like, I know I'll never get this done unless I have some accountability and unless I have some support on the way. And everybody was like, yeah, just write your book and then send it to me when it's done, and then we'll tear it apart and, you know, do it all over again. And I was like, nope. And then I talked to Ursula, who's like, you need to talk to Amanda, and she's amazing. And then I found you and I hired you, and it was amazing. The
Yeah,
end.
the
And then there was a
end. Don't you wish
yada
that
yada
was
yada yada
the
seven things.
Don't you wish that was the actual story? And then I hired you, and then there was a book.
And there's a book. Just like there's gonna be another book. It's so easy.
All right, now for the truth.
Now for the truth.
So what were some of those things that came up? Because I remember you coming in with a very aggressive timeline. You were like, I'm going to be in Europe, which was all kinds of fun for us to try to figure out coaching times and being parts of retreat. And oh my goodness, that was
9
fun.
hours time difference.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, fortunately, where you were, it was like light in the middle of the night. So I guess you could kind of trick yourself that it was daytime.
I loved it. I was in Tromsø, Norway for midnight sun. And actually, I think it really did help my writing process because I am a little bit of a night owl, but I didn't have to do this like, when am I going to hike? Like, oh, it's dark. You know, it gets dark at XYZ time. So it's just like, oh, I'm going to write with Amanda till 1 in the morning. And if I get annoyed, I'll go for a hike in the middle. And then I'll go to sleep and I'll wake up and then I'll go to sleep again. And I just kind of flowed with day and night whenever day and night felt like they should happen for me, which was helpful most of the
Yeah.
time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very, in a way, it sounds like it could be really frustrating and chaotic, but also welcome to the creative process. So it kind of gave you that flexibility more so than someone who's locked in, you know, a 9 to 5 and the routine at night with their family and all of those things. You kind of had this ability to sleep when you needed to sleep and right when you were inspired. So, yeah, I was excited to work with you in that capacity. And if I remember correctly, you did move every through the first few chapters rather quickly, right?
Yeah,
Like
I mean, I had a month that I was house sitting there. And so my goal was to write the book in a month before my mom came to visit me in Sweden. And so that was the goal. And I got the first four chapters done
right. Of
in
five chapters.
of
So you're
five
like 80% of the way done. And then what happened?
was done. And then I got stuck. And then I was like, and why isn't this part writing itself? Because even with other chapters, like I got a little bit stuck on chapter four. And then one day I was just like, I don't know why I can't write chapter four. And I went out for a walk and with my phone, and I just started talking into my phone. And most of chapter four came out because I guess I needed to be moving when I wrote that chapter. And, you know, other chapters came when I was sitting cozy in the sun with a cat on my lap, you know? So it's like each chapter almost had its own energy. And chapter five, because it was about bringing touch into larger community. I think because I was by myself in a house with a cat in the middle of nowhere, there was no community around to inspire me to write a book about or to write a chapter on how to bring touch into a larger community. And I was in Norway where people really, they're very standoffish in a certain way, right? You don't interact with somebody unless there's a reason to. They're very friendly, but it's not like America where you're just like, hi, I'm talking to people on the street, just saying hello at a coffee shop. It's not really done that way there. So me trying to connect and show how to bring touch out into the larger community was challenging because I wasn't getting any.
Yeah. And here you had this deadline, and you were like, I have to get this done before my mom gets here because I want to be completely focused on her. And then it didn't happen. And so tell us a little bit about this because, you know, you're not the first person, you're not the first creative that I have seen. Really walk into some hard times in relationships while trying to work through this, you know, a certain part of their book process. And sometimes that's tied to an old wound, but it sounded like for you, it was tied to actually needing connection and not being in the space where you were getting it.
Right. Right. And part of the reason why I wanted the book done before my mom came is because I didn't want to have to think about the book while my mom was there. Right. She's going to come join me for 3 weeks. And I think after that, I was going to England. So I wanted to like have the book done because then I was going to be with my mom and I was going to go help teach a class. And then I was going to do this stuff with veterans and, help them with their process and do a research study and all this stuff. And so I was like, has to be done before that happens. So my mom showed up, the book's not done. And so I'm like, well, I have to write it. And I kept like having the struggle of spending time with my mom and being in relationship and enjoying the time together and really being present for her and being like, but this book needs to get done. Like I have to get it done. So it's not over my head. And that was really hard and it created some disconnect. I got pretty crabby with her a few times, like she'd be like, oh, let's go, blah, blah. We'd hang out, maybe have a glass of wine. She'd go to bed. And then I'd like try to force myself to write the book. Like I'd sit down, like, I have to write right now. Like I have to just get this done. And it wasn't coming. And then you were very gentle and kind and told me, maybe you need to learn more. Maybe there's more to learn before this book, finish writing itself, which didn't make me very happy at the time. Because that's not what I
Gentle, gentle and kind coaching, not quite happily
to
received.
hear. Yeah. Dawn didn't take gentle and kind coaching in a gentle and kind way. Like, you don't know me. I'm going to make this happen. No, no, no. Creative me said, no, you actually aren't ready. Right. And so that's part of that story piece, right? It's like the story that I was telling myself was that I had to have it done and that. I had it inside of me and like I'd seen that. And then I was really frustrated that I couldn't just make it happen, right? Even with all your guidance and support. And yeah, it created communication challenges, it created touch challenges between my mom and I, like because like even when there was one day morning where we were kind of cuddling next to each other and I was just thinking about all the stuff I had to do and I didn't do this and I should have researched this hike that we're going to do, but instead I was trying to write and then I was really frustrated and then like she got out of bed and I was like, wow, I wasn't present at all with her like that whole time. Like I was finally getting the touch I needed and I wasn't paying any attention. And so that was like a kind of a big kick. Like, hey, look at you. My ego's like, yeah, you're writing a book about touch and being present with touch and you are totally not. You're not there at all. So, a little bit of imposter syndrome, but also a little bit of a realization of, so what is this teaching you? And where do I need to like follow my own advice, right? Because we all have learning curves.
We all, I think we need, I think that we write the book that we need to read.
Right.
I think that's what we end up doing. It's like we know it, we're coded for it, we come with it, and yet we forget it, and we need to regularly remind ourselves of it. So, yeah, I mean, I remember all of the texts and emails during that time. You were an unhappy person and client. I was like, oh my gosh, no, it's okay. Just you can do it. You can just relax and enjoy this process. And it's like, it needs to get done. And I know what it's like with the timeline because I use timeline accountability. And it works, I'd say like 85% of the time. I'll put a deadline out there to and tell everybody, and then I'll just make myself get it done. Because if I was doing this stuff just for me, it would never get done, but doing it for other people, I had a coach tell me one time that I was, I would know that I was healed when I stopped doing that. And I was like, okay, but in the meantime, I'm gonna use that because that's the right, like that's how I've gotten big projects done, that type of stuff. So I totally understood the timeline game. Like, I really wanted to help you get there. And then it's like, dang, there's always this other thing. And you got to chapter five before it happened. Usually happens, Teddy, notoriously, it's around chapter three, right? Like, most of our clients are just like around chapter three, we just hear those breaks, skidding and the loud slam. And we're like, uh-oh, what happened?
Right.
Where'd you go? So, and there's only so much that anyone can do during that time. Because what I found is that there's this like, and this is why I had to have you in this book, because there is this piece of like some sort of higher orchestration happening, right? Like we're not quite ready to write it. And so we need some sort of aha or interaction or something before we can settle into that space and actually complete it. And so I know that there was a really powerful experience that you had that was kind of that entryway into being reconnected with a larger community. So I'd love for you to share that story because that definitely falls under the you can't make this story up type
Right.
of moment.
Right. So I was in Brighton, England, and I was down there for a craniosacral research study, actually, where we were working with police officers who had PTSD and studying like what are the effects of group craniosacral with them. Anyway, so I went to this cafe over lunch break, and this like older gentleman came in, and it was like kind of one of those buffet cafes that you see in England. And he came in and he was just like trying to talk to people and being really curious. And he kept calling the waitress sweetie and he kept like, oh, what's that over there? And so, you know, he and I were chatting a little bit and I was like, oh yeah, you should eat here. Really, it was really good, you know, because he came over, he's like, oh, what are you eating? What are you having? And I was like, oh, and there's a menu on the wall. It's up there, so that's why no one sees it, you know. And we had this lovely conversation, and he ended up eating there. So when I got done, I went to say goodbye to him on my way out, because it was interesting just watching people like shy away from him as he was trying to talk to them and touch them. And obviously, coming from a different generation, like just after the Me Too movement, he didn't have the same level of awareness. And I think some of the younger women were taking it as like, oh, he's trying to touch me. But it's just like, and there's that sense of ageism too, right? Like older people get touched less often than any other age group. And he was just trying to be kind of friendly and sweet and all that stuff. So anyway, I sat down with him and we had a conversation. He started talking about his wife and, oh, you should meet my wife and she's so great. And, you know, but then he like kept like touching the back of my hand. He's like, oh, and you've got warm hands, warm heart. And like, we just had this really, really amazing connection. And, you know, and it was just so genuine. And like, all he wanted was, you know, somebody to talk to and somebody to connect with. Like, there was no ill will. He was just moving through life and looking for, you know, his wife was in a different county at the moment. So he was probably alone and just looking for some level of communication and human interaction. And that's really kind of what unlocked me from the book, is like realizing like, oh, look it, like as I'm talking about bringing touch into the larger community, I'm not just talking about American community or how do you translate it from, you know, Latin America to Britain to Sweden to Norway to Asia to all these places, but like also how are we looking at each other as, you know, how do we interact with kids? What, how are we teaching them about healthy touch, both with how we make them touch or don't make them touch, how we touch in front of them. You know, what we expect around touch. Are we only talking about sexual touch? Are we talking giving them boundaries around hugs and, you know, that kind of stuff? And then also, how are we doing it with older populations and different generations? And how can we communicate more clearly, but also have an understanding that they're coming from a different place than we are, right? And they perceive things differently, they've learned things differently. And it's not right or wrong, but, you know, if he touched me on my hand, I didn't want to be touched. I should have said like, thank you, please don't touch me, right? Just like really gently. But a lot of people were like, whoa, like just like doing this like avoidance thing that was really, for me, out of proportion, you
Yeah.
know, because it wasn't in line. Like if they had sat, like really thought about his intention. And the woman next to me actually even said something because she was eating by herself too. And he went and sat down. She's like, he kind of reminds me of my dad. Like, it's so sweet the way that you interacted with him. And I think even watching her, me interact with this gentleman, like reminded her like, oh, like that could be my dad. And I'm watching how people are just like kind of blowing him off and avoiding him and not wanting to talk to him because, you know, he might pull them into conversation or something, you know. And I think she had a little bit of a moment of like, you know, realizing how she was interacting with him as well, right? And like, what if that was her dad and he was just looking for someone to talk to? And everyone was like,
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's such a big deal. I mean, when I think about, because I had the gamut, right? Like I had this little boy at home, and we've you and I have joked because, some of my clients come in to mirror things that I don't see about myself, and some of them come in to like be my opposite, right? And like really challenge something that I need to move closer toward. And you were my opposite. So here you're, I'm reading your stories about being with your family, and everyone is like super affectionate and touchy. And I'm just like, I'm reading it and I'm actually getting physically like stressed, right? Because that was not the case for me. And I'm touch averse, less so than I used to be, but because I've been empathic my entire life. And so I could feel everyone's stuff. And when they got close to me, I wanted to move away because most of them were not, happy people. If we're honest,
Right.
right? Like, I was like, no, I actually don't want you to touch me and leave that with me, whatever that is, right? And so it's really funny that when my son got to me, I knew enough that touch was important, even though it wasn't comfortable for me, like all the child development I'd done for education and everything. And so I had to tell him, I knew that it wasn't going to occur to me to do a lot of hugging and touching. It was actually more natural as a mom than it was anywhere else in my life, thank God. But I knew that it probably still wasn't going to be enough because I didn't feel that need for myself. And so I told him when he was very little, anytime you need a hug, come get it, just ask for it. Like I kind of put all the responsibility back on him. And I had people like shame me for that. And I was like, I don't know any other way to do this and keep him healthy. Like,
Right,
because
right.
I'm gonna
And why not
fail
empower
him.
him now, right? Like, yes, it would be good if you could also
Right.
reach out, but of course, like, you've empowered him to like ask for what he wants, and how amazing is that,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. I think it turned out great. And, as I'm watching him now at 18, we were having conversations around like getting into the scene with like, where's he gonna find his person? And, it's like, I can see the like, because it is such a hot topic right now, there's like, it has that extra bit of anxiety. And then we lived with my grandmother who, same type of thing. Like she and him cuddled all the time. That was, they were so close in relationship all the time when he was little. But as she got older and a little bit harder and more challenging to be with, right? Like I saw her kind of diminishing and not getting what you're the affection like you're talking about with the older folks and how they don't get that kind of connection as easily. So it was interesting to, be able to witness that whole gamut and then to have you enter my life and be like, oh, okay, I like it was a breath of fresh air because, it's like, yeah, we should talk about this. Yeah, it was important for me to tell my kid that. As we're looking at this touch crisis happening in our culture, because, in another great You Can't Make This Story Up moment, you had your book set to launch in 2020, which everyone is going to remember as the year of social distancing, like, right? Like, keep away from everybody. So there was this crazy bit of irony that I remember hit you initially, like panic, like who is going to want to read a book about touch right now? And yet the flip side of that was like people need to read about that right now because what happened during the pandemic when it comes to touch.
Well, and to your point, not only did people need to read it, but people are more aware of touch than they ever have been. I mean, people got to feel what it's like, oh, I didn't realize how much those little touches of receiving change at the grocery store boosted me. I had one client who said the only touch I ever get is from my hairdresser and you as my massage therapist. Right? She's like, that's the only touch I ever got in my life. And then the occasional hug from friends when I saw them for lunch, but then all that went away. Right? She can go get her hair done. She can come get massage. She couldn't go out to lunch with her friends and she got nothing. And she didn't have any animals. Right? So some people they were alone, but at least they had an animal to cuddle with. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we saw people who weren't used to getting a lot of touch. All of a sudden, home 24/7, and the kids are on them, and the dogs are on them, and they're trying to run their Zoom meetings, and everyone's touching them, and everyone's demanding their attention, and they're just like, "What is happening to me? And I have no boundaries, and nobody has boundaries, and stop touching me!" And then all the way also to kind of the negative side of touch, right, where abuse went up, alcoholism went up, all those challenges, all those challenging things, suicide rates went up. And so we saw like this epidemic too of loneliness that wasn't only related to touch versus not touch, right? It was also related to finances and situation, all that kind of stuff. But, healthy touch boosts our immune system, right? There's studies done to show that it helps us neurally regulate, it helps us feel calm and peaceful. Right, we feel less threatened when someone that we know holds our hand. And so a lot of that was taken away from people. And so their threat levels were up, their loneliness was up, the isolation was up. I actually had read an article saying something about is loneliness killing our elderly. And it was a really interesting article. I think it was in the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, if I remember correctly. But yeah, and so the conversations, like I started having a video, like on my YouTube channel, I started actually doing some interviews with people about, how is it for you during the pandemic? And what are you doing instead? And how are you asking for touch? And how do you need touch? And what do your boundaries look like? And it was a really different conversation because now, as we're coming back in, or as people did start coming back into society, it's like normal things like a handshake all of a sudden became challenging. Like, oh, am I handshaking? Am I elbow? Am I hugging? Am I staying 6 feet? I don't know what to do, right? So it really gave people the opportunity to say, like, hey, how's it going? Hey, are you handshaking yet? Are you hugging? Elbow bumping? Like, where are you just namaste, staying 6 feet away? And all of a sudden that ability to communicate became more clear because people were like, yeah, no, I know that I want to stay 6 feet away. Or it allowed the empaths and the introverts to kind of be like, oh, this is my opportunity to just say, I actually prefer not to be hugged. Thank you. And have that really open and honest communication in a way that wasn't defensive to anybody. So I think it was a really empowering moment for those that chose to use it as such.
Absolutely. Well, I know it was I we have readers, and one of the readers in the community is Teddy, and I remember her having some very powerful insights as she was reading through your book. Teddy, are you wanting to
Sure.
share?
Yes. During the time that I was reading your book, I was suffering from feelings, and I hadn't put the label on them. Like I was telling my husband, I don't, is it grief? I don't know what I feel. I feel something so familiar and deep. It's like this thread that's run through my life, and I can't label it. I don't know if it was when I was reading your book or right before I was reading your book, that I got the word rejection. I lived with rejection. I suffered rejection. I was some of it wasn't meant to be. Like I changed school 6 or 7 times in kindergarten and first grade. So I was always the new kid, and trying to get in there and can't get in there, and you're out. But so I had this rejection. Reading the story that you tell about the exercise of moving forward, is it okay if I move forward? And you keep moving forward, and maybe the other one doesn't. But that I read it several times a day for several days. because it was breaking chains inside of me, understanding that I was never rejected. Somebody was just taking care of themselves. And oh my God, it just, I got so much healing through that because I was able to rewrite stories that had been so painful to me. And I could go back and go, oh, they were just taking care of themselves. You know, and then it was learning to take care of myself. Like, oh gosh, I put up with things I don't want. You know, I'm abusing myself because I'm putting up with things that are not comfortable and I don't like it because I'm supposed to do the loving and kind thing. And so anyway, that I get it out. Actually, I still get it out and read that part every once in a great while when I need it, because I realize that rejection is just so, it was such a part of my life, and being empowered to take care of myself and to label somebody else's behavior as, oh, they're just taking care of themselves. I love it.
Yay. I didn't know that story. Thank you for sharing. I'm so glad.
It's very powerful to me. I mean, I have chills talking about it. Yeah. It's a great, great gift. That was a great gift. Along with, I'm an Amanda type that I never felt like I needed touch. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it. I didn't think about hugging my kids. You know, it's terrible. Like, it didn't occur to me. And, but I was raised that way too. So, you know, there was no real, anyway, it also made me aware, and I started intentionally touching the people in my life, like understanding that just a little touch when I'm handing them their food, or, you know, I started intentionally touching. And then I realized, you know what? It feels good to have a touch like that. And so then I started wanting it.
Oh, awesome.
I don't like to be, you know, over, but I mean, just the touch, you know, and on your way, it was like, oh, that felt good.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. It definitely unlocked a lot. I mean, unlocked a lot of conversations around this topic in my family. And you know, as I share in the book, you know, in my part of our chapter, that like all these little things that I've had to do to trick myself over the years, like to try to, right, you know, meet needs that I know are real, while I'm trying to get all the BS out of the way that's on top of my own, right? Right. So, you know, that is translated into some very funny conversations and approaches, like putting a note in my calendar for about the time that I get home to remember to kiss my husband. Mm. Right.
It's that serious.
Like, it does not occur, and that really affects the relationship. And you know, so yeah, all of those things, and just being able to you know, talk about how and to relate even the physiological component to people, mm-hmm. the immune system piece and the relaxation piece. Because for me, when I get a hug, it's like bedtime. Like, it doesn't matter what time of day, my whole nervous system goes, like, I'm yawning, and you know, I get the like, are you okay? Like, do you, you know, it's just this, you know, full body, like, okay, you know. But I mean, some people take that not well, right? Like, that wasn't their intention for the hug, right? And it's like, yeah, but that's what it's doing to my system. That's actually a good sign that this is healthy touch, that I feel safe. And so it's been really good to have all that language and content to share with the people who I regularly offend, let's say.
God
Well,
bless
it
them.
lowers the cortisol levels, right? So you're helping them be less stressed, more in their body. All of those things.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's actually really great too, that awareness, like of communication on touch, because when my dad, like it was one of my fears, right? Is my dad reading the book, because I talk about my parents in the book quite a bit. And I told them, like, hey, I'm gonna put you in the book. Is that okay? You know? And they were like, yeah, whatever. You know, I don't. But my dad read the part where I didn't get the kind of hug I wanted. And so when COVID was happening, he wanted everyone to stay away. Right. And so I didn't get to see him for quite a few months. And then when I did see him, and he had read the book, right? And I showed up and he like gave me like it's never serious. It's like the longest and the best hug I've had since I was a child, right? Because he was just like,
Oh.
I'm so sorry I didn't give you the kind of hugs that you wanted every single time, right? And it's just like, and now every time he hugs me, it's with so much awareness and so much like love. And not that it wasn't there before, right? But it's like he's remembering, like, this is my daughter, like, this is how we do this, you know? And
Intentional.
it's really intentional.
Yeah.
So.
That's beautiful. I love it when our books help our parents. We're so
Got
much
me to talk
about
since you're both crying here.
like prevention and intervention, you know, of like the little ones and trying to help them grow up. And I think that sometimes it's frustrating for those of us who, how we call ourselves, black sheep, the rebels, the pathfinders, like we're the ones in our family who are just like, no, that's not healthy. And I don't know how, I don't know what is, but I'm gonna go find it and figure it out. And that usually creates these big rifts, right? And so you know, I remember being in my 20s and just fighting all the time, like trying to be like kind of like that moment that you're talking about with your dad, like the internal scream, like, why can't you just, right? Like,
Yeah,
you and
just
I.
hug me. It's like, put down your breakfast. I want a hug. Come on. I'm six in here, still somewhere. I'm six. Can you please just,
My 6-year-old is really
no?
pissed
Okay,
right now.
fine.
Yeah. And
Chocolate.
I just,
Oh, boy.
speaking of the 6-year-old, you're grabbing the chocolate now. This actually, I have to say, this is like one of my favorite parts of coaching you is having you online and just being like, I wonder what she's eating now. Like, I absolutely hated it when you were doing all those cleanses and fast because it was like, really, carrots and celery? Like, come
So
on,
expensive in
girl.
Norway, though. Don't eat carrots and celery in Norway. Like the most expensive place to do it ever. Like that should be a dollar a bag. It was like $8 a bag. I was like,
Oh
I'm
my.
paying $8 for carrots. I should buy chocolate instead.
Right.
But I felt good. I
Yeah.
felt good But it was true. Like the nearest town was an hour away. So if I forgot chocolate or if I ran out, like too bad. You don't get chocolate till you drive back into town. So if you're gonna eat
Terrible.
that all four candy bars in one day while you're writing that chapter, that's it. Good luck. Moderation.
Maybe there's a strategy in there for our clients because, you know, I mean, chocolate is an essential part of this process.
Is. Antioxidants, caffeine.
Minerals, right? It's really, really important.
It's really important.
That reminds me of when we did the roast last year and I asked the prompt was upside down makes me feel, and you said fat. I was like, yeah, we all get there, don't we? While we're working on our creative projects, because you know what's interesting though? The gentleman, Lonnie, who's working on the foreword for our book, was perfect. You can't make this story up moment. He read one of our collaborators' chapters. And the way that he did that was that he took his wife out and they talked about it. And they're both therapists and they were going to do this over dinner. And then they decided, skip dinner, let's go to dessert. And they ordered like every dessert on the menu, like tons of chocolate, like what, not normal for them, I guess. But it was perfect because then they started reading her chapter, right? And so one of the things that he's all about the neuroscience. And so when he was thinking about all of the chocolate, and we were joking about how like it is an essential part of what we do here, he was like, well, yeah, because and I can't remember the name of the part of the brain, but he's like, what you're really craving when you're going after the chocolate and the carbs is touch and connection. That's what you're really needing, and you're running for that. I wish I could remember which part of the brain that is, but I was like, oh, I gotta remember to tell Don that.
Which is fascinating because homeopathic chocolate is all about love and connection to love and disconnection from love.
Yeah, right. That's why I drink all the cacao, because it's full of that theobromine and it's this heart expander and it's good energy and totally. So, through this whole process, I remember whenever I would think about you on your trip while you were writing, and I was, I had this vision of you being out in the forest somewhere hiking and tapping all the time. Because that's what you told me you were doing, right? Like you'd hit a block and you'd start tapping. So I really would love for you to share. I know that tapping was a huge part of your practice, but I love sharing the strategies of like what got you through those tough moments and those tough blocks that you were coming up against, in addition to the human connection with the older gentleman and that experience with your mom. What are some of the ways that you took care of yourself through this process?
So emotional freedom techniques are tapping, right? Was my main one. Snuggling with Gabriella's cat, that turned out to be a big one for me as well. But movement. I'm such a mover, and when I get mentally stuck, or when I get really frustrated, when I get any kind of big emotion, I move, right? So there was a lot of like put the computer down, walk out the back door, walk up the hill, like stomp around, talk to myself about, whatever it is I'm talking about, or, try to clear whatever block, whatever fear was coming up around who am I going to offend, or what are people going to think when they read this, or, like why does it have to be this way, or, whatever was coming up for me. So there was a lot of movement, a little, some yoga too, because sitting and being on the computer for a while, got to be a lot. I don't do well sitting behind computers. When I'm working with clients, it's different because like I'm engaged with them and doesn't feel like I'm behind a computer. But I was a massage therapist for 20 years, so I was up moving all the time. Like I barely sit. And so I would say that was my biggest thing. Music. Turn on some music, dance around a little bit, because
Yeah.
I like to dance. But really for me it was the hiking, the movement, the yoga, eating. Coffee. There's a lot of coffee because coffee goes well with chocolate. So it'd be midnight and be like, you know what I need with this chocolate? Some coffee, because it's midnight. I think I'm gonna do that. But there were these like soothing rhythms, which is also why I got into carrots and celery for a while, is because sometimes I just wanted the motion of processing, right? Of eating something, of chewing something, because it was like, it's literally like as I'm chewing something over in my brain, I wanted to chew something over in my mouth, right? And I didn't always want chocolate as much as I talk about it and eat it. Sometimes it felt really good for my body to have something more clean and more healthy and more, and yeah, just more streamlined. But I would say those are my little ways of taking care of
Yeah.
myself.
Yeah. Awesome. And what did I know that you kind of had this vision when you came into the process. It was going to be on this timeline and it was going to be like, have a lot of research. And, we kind of had to work with the content to see how much of that was going to work for your readers. And so, what did you discover through this process? Because a lot of times we get kind of locked into what we think it's going to look like, how we think it's going to launch, what we think the impact is going to be. So what was it that you discovered that is like something really a treasure that you're taking with you from the creative process?
The biggest thing, and I think you're the one that told me this. So one of as someone that heals people for a living, I work with people that have been sexually, physically, emotionally abused, who have really strong triggers around things, who are learning healthy touch, all of that, are trying to have better relationships. And I was really deathly afraid of two things. Number one, offending or hurting my parents or somebody that I love by telling the stories in the book that I did. And I was also really afraid of triggering somebody that I'd had not good experience of touch. And so I was really, so it was hard for me to tell some of the stories. And I think that Me Too piece, when I started just addressing the Me Too, like it came across too harsh, and then it came across like it wasn't. I had such a hard time putting it together, and like readers kept saying, like, yeah, there was something in that one chapter that triggered me. And I can't remember what it was. And I was like, is the Me Too section. I know it was. Because it's so hard to encapsulate like a whole movement into like a paragraph and give a nod to like, this is important. However, this book's about healthy touch. So I can't write about abuse touch in this book. It's way beyond the scope of the book. That's like, there's tons of books out there on that. So I really had to work through like, what would it be like, if I triggered somebody? And I think one of the things that you said that helped is, you've got a good message when people are both running towards it and away from it at the same time. And that was really important for me to hear. And I had to do a lot of tapping around, what are my parents going to think? And what if I trigger somebody? And so, like, literally within the same month, and I talk about this in this book, right? I got letters from both sides. And so I got to work through that and realize how much healing I had done around both those situations, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah, that was huge. I remember seeing that email. I have to give a nod to Jonathan Fields for that, the power of a message running to and from, because that was I was on retreat with him in a program, and he said that to me. And I remember having this moment where I was like, I know that's true, but also like I hate it when people run away from me.
right.
Like,
Domino so bad. Come back, George. Like, just
What do you do about that? Because I don't want them to run away because I'm hurting or they're mad or whatever, you know. And he was like, you gotta just focus on the ones that are running at you, because they're the ones that are ready and hungry and they're gonna get it. And it kind of goes back to what Teddy was saying about the rejection piece, right? Like this whole, like they're taking care of themselves. Maybe they're not at the point right now where they can digest the concepts here. So they have to go find another book or work with the therapist first, or, and none of that is your fault. That's all their story. And so, yeah, I mean, I remember you sending me that email and your response and me being like, damn, that was amazing. It was like, how much tapping did you have to do before you responded to her? Because it was so intense. And it is so hard to be on the I really do think that's one of the reasons why messengers don't finish books, don't get on stages, don't, especially don't run re events, you know, with people there. Because you got to get used to like ducking and covering when, you know, your work in life is to challenge the status quo. That's what you're doing. And to say, that's not working for us. That's not working for anyone. Like, you might think so, but here's long term. And, you know, that's part of it is dealing with the controversy and the conflict and the criticism and all of those ugly seeds that none of us want to
Right.
deal
Exactly.
with. So, but yeah, I mean, I was like, wow. You handled that like a total badass. I couldn't believe it. Because I mean, that would have taken me days to respond, just to calm down because of the energy that was still in that email when it got to me.
Yeah. And what was interesting about it is I think I'd prepared so much for it that when I got the email, I was really able to read it with like love and compassion and like feel her hurt. And just like it didn't even, I didn't even think about it or tap about it right away. I just was like, I'm so sorry that you're hurting. This wasn't the scope of the book. That's why I didn't write about abuse. And and tried to acknowledge her pain and her suffering while also giving a gentle nudge to like maybe this is a call to have you go to a therapist and heal or find, that part of your journey, and really not take that responsibility on myself. And then I sent it. And then I was like, oh my God, I triggered somebody. You know what I mean? It was like it just downloaded so easily and so gently out of me. And then like once I sent it, I was just like, oh man, that. Then I got to feel the impact, right? It's like almost like when you're in an accident, you just like you do what you need to do, and then once it's done, then you have the shakes, Then your nervous system discharges all the residual energy. That's kind of what it felt like, yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. So I'm so glad, and I think that that's testament to the work that you did with the tapping and just having the foresight to be able to say, like, this is gonna happen. I am gonna be prepared for it. I'm
Right.
gonna clear as much of this as I can in the meantime. And
Right.
yeah, that's awesome. So what's next for you, Don? What are you working on?
I am working on a book on relationships. So that's fun, because now I'm triggering every single relationship I've ever had. It's mainly about partnership style relationships, and it's a fiction style book, kind of because I'm working with archetypes. I figured I couldn't write it like my first book and have all my ex-boyfriends and my former husband and stuff be like, because everyone that knows them would be like, oh, that was so and so. Oh. So I didn't want to do that, and I also wanted it to really like for people to resonate with it. So what I did is I kind of took an archetypical man-woman relationship, marriage actually. Where they've got two kids and they're kind of hitting that point where they're like, what do we do? Do we stay? Do we go? What's happening in the relationship? Do we want to fix it? Do we not want to fix it? And kind of bringing them through that with emotional freedom techniques with the tapping and watching them kind of unfold their own. Where did these patterns come from? Where did these little hurts that we didn't realize we hadn't let go of yet? How are we still hanging on to those? How have we gotten used to interacting with each other in certain ways? And not giving the other person what they wanted, right? Which is, it's been like the outline, like normal. The outline came out in what, like 3 hours? I was like, I think I'm gonna write the outline for the book. Outline came out. I've never written an outline in my life for anything, like really. Even the first book, I was like, we were all post-it noting. No, I just noted the outline, came out. First chapter came out, no problem. And then I got stuck.
Yeah.
And now all the relationship stuff is coming up, and all the relationship stuff is happening. I'm in the upside down stage, as Amanda likes to call it, where it's like, okay, what's left over in my healing process? What haven't I healed with myself? And it's no surprise that I've also just finished my relationship and intimacy coaching training, which also stirred up things. I'm working a lot with individuals who are trying to decide if they're staying or leaving their relationship. I'm watching some challenges between my parents as they kind of navigate some new places in their lives. And it's hard, but it's worth it. So I'm still going. And so, I was hoping it'd be out this month. Probably chapter two will get done this month. That's all right. That's all right.
What's the next timeline you can put on it?
I don't know. I don't know. By the time I'm done with this trip, so I'm out driving around in my Yukon and giving myself time, that creative time and creative space. Because, as you pointed out before, right? Some people have a challenge writing around friends and family and work and all the stuff. And for me, I found that to be really true. That I'd get actually upset at myself. Like I'd wake up on a Wednesday and be like, I want to write. Like, no, I have to go to my business networking meeting and go do massages all day. And then I'd actually be angry about it. Like, no, but I want to write. So I'm giving myself some space on the road. I'm working with all my clients online, obviously not my massage clients, but and giving myself more time to really have that spaciousness to allow the creative flow to come back. Because I think it's a really important story, and especially now, post-COVID, divorce rates are the high, people are trying to figure out what they want to do. There's new gender fluidity, there's new definitions on what a relationship looks like. A lot of polyamory kind of things, open relationships happening. And so I also want to help people understand like where whatever's happening in your relationship is all you, right? And so how can one heal oneself, and how can that actually change the trajectory of a whole relationship? Because it can. And my clients do it all the time, right? They'll do some tapping work with me. They'll shift a couple of ways that they interact. They'll shift some of their perspective on things. They'll start feeling love different. They'll receive love different. They'll be able to communicate to their partners different. And the whole relationship shifts. And it's really, really amazing to see. So I'm glad to be doing that work. And
primary research, girl, primary research.
right. Primary research, right. Exactly.
Well, I'm sure that after listening to this, people are going to want to reach out to you. How do you want them to connect with you? What's the easiest way?
Probably the easiest way is to find my website, which is touchremedies.com. There's contact forms. There's all my stuff on there. You can set up a little 20-minute consult or conversation with me if you want to talk about anything, including questions that you have on the book or places that you get stuck or whatever. That's a free consult. And I'm doing classes online for tapping and for touch stuff. So that's lovely. But yeah, I think my touch website would be the best. I mean, I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all the places, but you know, sometimes social media shuts down my accounts because sometimes I talk about sex. So my website will be there forever. I'm on Instagram account. I'm sorry. No, I never created a new Instagram account because that's illegal.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yep.
Oh, any last thoughts or questions, Teddy, before we close out for the day? No? Yeah.
Sorry about that. Not really. I just want you to know how valuable your work has been to me. It's been, life changing.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Dawn, for doing all of the hard work to get the first book done, and for all the hard work that you're doing now to get the second book done. And, you know, I mean, thank you for being part of this collaborative project. I think that it's really, really important for other creatives and coaches to see that there's this whole other invisible world of dynamics that keeps us from getting things done on the timeline that we think, or getting it done in the exact way that we imagine. And so, you know, I just want to thank you for the message that you brought to our community and for doing the work that you're doing to get it out into the world.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. And who knows, maybe now that I've done this video, maybe I'll start up my YouTube channel again. Start doing work on my Touch Remedies YouTube channel.
Yes.
So maybe this is just what I need to get unblocked. So I appreciate your time and energy as well.
Yeah, my pleasure. Mm-hmm. All right, ladies. Well, that's a wrap. Until next time.
Bye. Bye.